Joanna B. Butt is being interviewed today as a member of the Women's Overseas Service League. She is being interviewed on January the 14th, 2004, at the Army Residence Community in San Antonio, Texas. She's a member of the San Antonio unit of the Women's Overseas Service League. The interviewer is Ruth Stewart, assisted by Carol Hapgood. Joanne, tell us a little bit about your early life.
Well, I was born in Austria and came to this country with my parents when I was 2 1/2. And I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, attended high school and a year of college there. And then I became ill. I had pneumonia quite a few times, and the doctor said I had to go to a warmer climate. So I couldn't figure out how to get there because we had no money. And so I thought, well, I'll just be in nursing school. You know, they accept you for a minimum amount of money. In fact, it cost $85 at that time to go in. And so I picked Phoenix, Arizona. I picked it from the travel folders, and I went to a warm climate. And I finished nursing school there, and at that time, I graduated in 43, so the war was on.
What school was that?
Good Samaritan Hospital School of Nursing. It was a 3-year course. And so then, I had intended to be a flight nurse, and on the commercial airlines at that time. I thought, well, that would be get me away from the hospital.
The stewardess at that time.
The stewardess. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, so I joined the Army Air Corps. And I was went to basic at Lackland Air Force Base, which at that time was San Antonio Aviation Cadet Center. And I was sent to Big Spring for my first assignment after basic. And I enjoyed it very much, but I made a mistake. I dated the chief nurse's boyfriend and got transferred within 24 hours to the ground forces. So I went to Camp Barkley and then to Fort Rucker. Camp Rucker was at that time Alabama, but the unit was activating. I was sent to the 123rd Quebec Hospital, semi-mobile.
And that was in the Army, not the Air Force?
Army. Well, I got transferred to the ground force. See, it was all the Army, the ground force, and the Air Corps were all one. So they could transfer you around to either one. So I went overseas. I had applied for a flight nursing school while I was at Big Spring. But, of course, I was transferred to the ground force, and I was sent overseas with the 123rd back. And when I got there, I'd been there a short time, and my application was approved for flight nursing school. So I went to the personnel tent, and the sergeant said, your application's been approved. And I said, great, I'm leaving. And he said, no, you're not. You're in an active unit, and it's canceled. Bam, that was it. So then I stayed there. I was there for a little better than a little bit over a year. And I came home, and I had enough points. But we followed Patton part of the time. We were in 15th Corps once, and then we followed General Patton. And it was quite interesting. You know, he was a very interesting person to observe. And I had met him when I was in Phoenix in nursing school.
Tell me a little bit about your interaction with Patton and your observations.
Well, I'll tell you, he was a genius in many respects. But he was a typical soldier, and I thought he was too rough and all. I wasn't fascinated with him as a man. But one time he came, inspected our hospital. He came in with our chief nurse and our commanding officer, and I was in the operating tent. And he walked in, blustering, and I threw him out. And of course the commanding officer and the chief nurse turned green. I thought, oh, this is the end of me. But he turned around and he commended me for doing my job. Then I felt big. Anyway, so then I came back and I got out of the service.
Just a minute. This was your This was in Europe then.
World War II. I was in France and Germany.
France and Germany.
We landed at Le Havre.
And how long were you there?
We landed in, let's see, in January, at the beginning of January of 1944, and I came home in February of 45. No, wait a minute. 46.
Okay, so you were there 2 years then.
No, just 1 year.
44?
I came back. I got there in 45.
45. After the war? Well,
no,
it ended in August of 45. That's
yeah,
right.
And we got there in December, okay. Actually.
Okay.
I've got written down on this okay. thing. And so anyway, then I came back and I was discharged in February of 46. I thought I was discharged, but I was just separated. I found out that much later. Nobody gave us any information. So then I decided to go back and get my degree. Well, I got married first, and my husband was killed, and then I decided to go back and get a degree.
Was he in the service?
Yes, he was in the Air Corps.
And that's where he met his death?
Yes, over in Germany.
During the war?
No, it was after the war.
After the war. But he was still in the service.
Yes, he stayed in the service. And we got married in Germany. And then he was killed, and I came back. And interestingly, I just learned to drive, so I brought a car back, and I drove it from New York to St. Louis. And I didn't even have a valid driver's license. I had a student permit. And I got picked up on 6 counts by the police. One, I backed into a light pole and the light bulb fell off. And then it was Saturday evening, so I was taking my mother to see some relatives. And so, you want to hear this? And so anyway, I was taking my mother to see some relatives, and so I was headed the wrong way, so I turned around and made a U-turn. And then I parked in front of the house, and we went in, and pretty soon the police came and picked me up. It seems that my cousin had been feuding with her neighbor, and a neighbor called the police. And they took me in, and my mother and dad had to sign my bond. Of course, when the thing came to the court, the judge laughed his head off. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. Because I still had my overseas license on there, and he said, "You don't have a Missouri license." I said, "Well, Missouri is in the USA, isn't it? I have a USA license." So he just was laughing, and I got dismissed. But anyway, so then I went back, and I got my degree at Washington University in St. Louis. I decided to go back to school.
Bachelor of Science?
In nursing.
And where was that?
Washington University in St. Louis, okay. Missouri. And I had a job there, and I was working on my master's, and I was a supervisor at Barnes Hospital in St. Louis. And I got a letter from President Truman telling me to get my affairs in order. I didn't realize that I was still in the reserve, in active reserve. Nobody told us. When we were discharged, they just, you know, got rid of us. And so I decided to join regular Army. They wouldn't mess around like that. And I came back in service in 1951. I was stationed at Fort Campbell with a paratrooper and was sent to Japan, and I was sent down to 382nd General Hospital in Kanoka Barracks, which is outside of Osaka, about 30 miles outside. And then I got orders for Korea twice, but the commanding officer had me taken off the orders, and I stayed there as surgical supervisor, operating supervisor. And we took only casualties from Korea, so we were considered a casualty hospital. We didn't have...
And that was where now?
It was Kanoka Barracks, 382nd General Hospital in Japan. So then after that...
So you were taking care of casualties from World War II then?
No, from...
From Korea.
Korea. We got them within 24 hours. And every time the Koreans had a push, we worked 18 hours a day, straight through. because we had so many casualties. They were really evacuating them out rapidly. Mm-hmm. So then I came back to the States, and I was sent to Fort Sam, Houston, and taught in the enlisted courses section for 2 years.
When was that?
That was in 1954. I was air evac'd back, in fact, and as a patient. And it really was interesting because they sent me to the wrong hospital, and so then I ended up being there waiting for orders, and I bought a car, and then they said, I had to go by air, and I said, well, you have to ship my car then. And they said, no, we'll give you TDY, you know, travel time. So anyway, then I ended up at Fort Sam Houston, and I taught in the enlisted course section there. And
what was it you were teaching?
Enlisted course.
OR techs?
Operating techs. But I taught some of the general subjects too. In fact, someone that was ill, I had took theirs too, and I was assistant chief nurse there. And you know, you always get a title. Somebody from the Surgeon General's office came down to do an inspection, and of course the headquarters passed the buck, and I ended up having to take her around, you know, the post and all that. So I was talking to her and told her I'd like to get my master's. Next thing I knew, I got orders to go to school for my master's. I went to Western Reserve in Cleveland, Ohio. I was there for a year and sent to Madigan. And after that, I went on recruiting in Seattle, Washington. And very interestingly there, I had applied for a transfer from Madigan because I was allergic to something in the Northwest. And it was located, Fort Lewis is near Tacoma, Washington. Well, Seattle was only 100-something miles up the road. And so after I asked for a transfer out of the area, they sent me 100 miles up the road. So there I was again. But in recruiting, I did traveled most of the time. I had Washington, Oregon, Montana, and part of Idaho as my territory. And there are more cattle than nurses in that area. But I did very well, and I decided not to take the third year there. So that was set, went to Fort Bragg, and was educational coordinator and assistant chief nurse there. And I got married there also, but I'd known my husband before. I had met him on recruiting.
This is a second marriage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, it was really a third. But,
oh, okay.
But anyway, and I had met him in Walla Walla, Washington. We got married at Fort Bragg a couple of years later. And so I stayed there for quite some time. And I had a recruiting program as part of my duties, too. And so I went to see General Westmoreland, and he was terrific about supplying all sorts of things that we needed, plus entertainment for the student nurses that the directors brought down.
Now, what was his position at that point?
He was commander of the airborne there, I guess.
He was on the same post. He was at Fort Bragg.
He was at Fort Bragg, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was with the Special Forces.
Okay.
And
so he was very helpful.
Most helpful. His aide told me I couldn't see him, but I went right on in anyway. And he didn't throw me out. So I got what I wanted. And he was really good. It was all for education, you know, and recruiting and all that. And of course, the Special Forces, they put on interesting demonstrations, and the Golden Knights put on demonstrations. That impressed the little student nurses who were brought in. And of course, I got each one of them a nice young lieutenant for a date on Saturday night. So they went to the club and danced, ate and danced, you know. So it worked out very well. But then my husband and I were transferred to Puerto Rico. And from there he went to Vietnam, and I volunteered to go to Vietnam, but they turned me down because there was no vacancy in my MOS and grade. And then So I was going to be sent to Walter Reed. However, my mother, my younger sister died. My mother, she was 80, and she couldn't cope with it too well. So I asked for a transfer to Fort Leonard Wood, because my mother was in St. Louis. And so I got transferred to Fort Leonard Wood, and I stayed there 3.5 years and retired from there. When I was teaching at Fort Sam, we had Air Force and Army students, because the Air Force didn't have their training program for the medics yet. And they were working on it. And Wilford Hall hadn't been built yet, of course. So that, then when that was built, they started it there, as far as I know. They had it several places, though, too. Mm-hmm. But we had Air Force nurses assigned with us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to your time in Japan. What was it like for you as a woman living in Japan?
I didn't get out too much, really, but it was very interesting. And when I could, you know, I traveled all over, and I didn't have to worry. And of course, one good thing, if yet we're going with friends, we were all taller than the Japanese then, and you could find them easily. But one time I was in Kyoto, Japan, and they had a riot. And I was frightened. I got, you know, but I hid in a temple so that nothing happened. There wasn't too much violence, but they were beating each other a little bit, you know, that sort of thing. But
what
I didn't want to get in
the riot?
I don't know. At times they had riots. Just like when in Puerto Rico, they'd have demonstrations. And when they demonstrated against the government, you know, the military, then I'd have to go in full battle gear to my post. Well, it was the same type of thing in Japan, too. Mm-hmm. And we had typhoons there that were really severe. Mm-hmm. And, of course, every time that we had a typhoon, they brought all the dependents into the hospital and put them in our rooms and moved us out, because we were supposed to be on duty. We didn't need a room.
Yeah.
And, of course, they always put a youngster who wet the bed in my bed. And I had a fight getting a new mattress, because, you know, by the time they'd been there a few days, that mattress was not so good.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
Did you live in the hospital?
Yes, I lived in quarters all the time until, in fact, when I first went there, there were 4 of us to one room, and we were all captains. Can you believe that? And we had one chest of drawers, and that was it. And we had a rod that you could hang some clothes on, and had community shower. And that was interesting, because every time we'd take a shower, some Japanese would come in and fix something. But they didn't pay attention to you. Mm-hmm. They'd nod at you, and you'd nod, and then that was the end of it. Of course, you know, they take community baths there, too. So
they're not as prudish as we are.
No, it was fine. Of course, some of the nurses didn't get used to that.
Mm-hmm. And what was the food like for you there, on post or off post?
Well, on post, it was the same army rations, you know. It was pretty good. But off post, they had wonderful food. But of course, you know, you had to be careful about eating it. And I know one time, several of us went down to the south, and we ate raw oysters, which we shouldn't have done. 2 of the ladies ended up in the hospital. I managed to stay out on my feet. But I should have had better sense.
And what about your recreation there?
Well, we had a bowling alley that we could bowl, and we had a swimming pool, and there was a golf course, but the first time I went to practice, one day, and the next day, the whole thing had burned down, so that was the end of golf right there. But we used to take short trips when we had time off. But every time I put in for a vacation, the North Koreans would have a push, and my leave was canceled. I never got away on a leave. I had planned to climb Mount Fuji one time, and another time I was going to Hong Kong, Thailand, but both of those were canceled.
Yeah. What about your life then in Europe, Western Europe, when you were there?
During the war?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was miserable. We lived in tents, hospital tents, 13 of us to a tent. And it was cold and snow and ice and mud. And they had, you know, they used to have to escort us to the latrines, because some of the troops around the area hadn't seen women for a long time and thought they would never see another one, so they'd keep invading our area. But it was interesting. And I had a talent for building fires. I was a pyromaniac when I was a kid. And then we had a little, the pot-belly stoves at home when we first came from Europe. And I could keep that fire going always. But so that was my job. I built the fires every morning. I didn't have to do anything else in the tent because we all had little chores. And one time when we were in pyramidal tents, one of the gals hung her rubber girdle up beside the stove. And I built such a good fire that girdle was dripping. And she really gave me the devil. It was my fault. Can you imagine? But the conditions weren't good. We had slit trenches most of the time. Sometimes we had latrines. And then when the water truck came by to give you a shower, it seemed like every time I got my hair soaked up good, they ran out of water. That was the kind of life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, we didn't, the supplies would be cut off. We didn't have rations. One time we were being transferred on a troop train, and the French stole our rations, so nobody had anything to eat for 3 days. And I wasn't the type to carry candy bars or anything, so I drank water, period. Mm. But it wasn't bad. Yeah. I needed to lose weight anyway because I ate everything in sight. When I was going over on the ship, I'd never forget, we heard all these lies about supply, all this news about the supply lines being cut, and this and that. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll never eat again. And so I put down well, of course, I didn't get seasick. In the Northern Atlantic, it's very bad. But since I didn't get sick, I'd go to the mess hall twice a day. We had two meals a day. And I ate somebody else's portion, too. I ate everything in sight. And in 13 days, I gained 14 pounds. And I couldn't zip my slacks, so chief nurse gave me a safety pin to him so I could get off the boat.
Decently.
Yeah. And we had to wade ashore, and that wasn't good. Mm-hmm. Cold. Mm-hmm. And they transferred us open trucks to our first encampment. And we sat there, and it was raining, and it was sleeting and snowing. And, there was a rim of ice around your rump where you'd been sitting. And it was cold.
It was difficult.
But it was difficult. Actually, it was very good, really. We were angry. It seems that the supply, the exec officer had misread the orders. We were supposed to go by train. But a couple of days after we were set up already, the train that we were supposed to be on came in and crashed through the station. And they were all wooden cars, and everybody was maimed, and really, many dead. And we had to go down and work at the sea. Then we were thankful he made the mistake. Because another time, he got us behind the German lines. But the Germans thought they were surrounded, so they kept surrendering to us. We were there by mistake.
That's a wonderful story.
Well, then what things had happened. And another time we set up and we turned on all the lights and everything else. And so my friend and I, we found a horse wandering around. And so we started riding this horse around. And then the troops came in and said that it was a minefield that hadn't been cleared yet. And here we'd been riding that horse around. So then we had to go and sit quietly until they cleared the field.
What was your other kind of recreation besides riding horses on minefields?
Well, one time the British had captured some police horses, and they told us we could go up there and ride. So when we had free time, whenever they had a battle, we had all these casualties. In between times, we just sat and waited. And so we went over to the stables, and I'm not much of a rider. I'm the kind that I part the company with the horse at least once during a ride. But anyway, so we went over there, and I told the groomsman, I said, young British soldier, I said, oh, give me a real slow horse. I don't ride well. So he gave me a horse, and I looked at it. So that doesn't look slow at all. But I got on, and the others had started off already. I'm in the rear. And I'm not a good rider, and I kind of panicked. And so the horse took off. And he went the head of the pack. And I thought, oh, my God, what am I? But instead of pulling back on the reins, I kept yelling. And it was a German horse. He probably didn't understand stop anyway. So I slid off. And I thought, oh, I'll never get back on that animal again. But he stood right there. He stood there by me. And he nudged me with his hoofs, and I wouldn't get up. And then he got his head down. I thought, I better get up or he'll kill me. So I crawled back up on him, which was a job. And then we're riding again, and I'm still out of control. And there's a creek running across the field. So I thought, oh, he'll stop there. No, he jumped it, and I'm with him. I landed on him, but then I slid off after that. So then finally, it dawned on me, I should pull back on the reins. And when I did, he did everything I wanted. And after that, I rode him all the time. So, but he almost killed me first. I had a total of 20 years and 6 months.
And when were you discharged then?
In 1970, the 31st of February. But I always say 1 March because that's when I started retirement.
Of what year?
1970.
70, okay. Okay, and since then, what did you do after retiring?
Well, my husband had retired a year before, and he insisted that I had to either retire or get rid of him, one or the other. So I made my decision and retired. And then we went down to Tucson, Arizona, where we had bought some land and built a house. And I was going to go to school the following year and work on my PhD. I wanted to do that in sociology because I figured I wouldn't have to go to work. I could just volunteer with that stuff. I didn't plan on working. And but then things didn't work out. The following year, my mother became an invalid, and I brought her down to live with us. And that was a 4-year deal. And after that, my husband became an invalid. And so by the time I was finished with both of them, I didn't feel like tying myself down again to school. Mm-hmm. Because I've been tied down so much. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have an invalid around the house, it's 24 hours a day.
It sure is, yeah.
So anyway, so I decided I'd just play.
Okay.
And I traveled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you join any veterans organizations?
Oh, yes. I used to belong to the MOWW and the retired officers, and I joined WOSL, and what else? And then, of course, I played golf a lot. Mm-hmm. I kept busy and traveling. I used to take at least one trip a month.
Mm-hmm. Had an interesting life all the way through.
Well, I think so. Not always what I wanted, but it was interesting.
It obviously was a very interesting life, and you certainly put a lot of zest into it all along the way.
I had fun. I'll tell you what, but I was a misfit in the service at first. I really was. Well, I didn't tell you one time. We'd been on R&R, and it was right before VE Day, and the official VE Day. There was a rumor that the war had ended, and we were flying from Cannes up Nice, France, up to Paris, and we were going to. We had orders for the train, but we hitched a ride on the plane. We thought that would be easier. When we landed, the rumor was the war was over, and the French were out there with champagne and all that. Of course, my luggage was stolen. I turned around. I was at the airport. I turned my back, and somebody took my luggage. That was okay. And we stayed 2 or 3 days, and when we came back to the hospital, they said, commanding officer, chief nurse took us to the commanding officer. You girls are AWOL. I said, no, we're not. The war is over. We only came in for the duration. That's all. Well, you know, that didn't set too well. But things like that.
Yeah. It has been very interesting, and I appreciate so much, Joe, all this interesting story that you've told us and some very, very interesting sidelights of your life in both the Army and Air Force, Air Force and then Army, whichever way it was.
It was Air Force.
All of which. Thank you very much.